powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal. Greg, how's it going?
It's going great. What's happening?
We've entered into a comparatively more quiet part of the off season after a hectic draft weekend, or I guess probably much longer than that for you guys over there at NFL Network. And the Seahawks have a couple new guys we're looking at. However, Greg, I read a column of yours recently in which you said that you might be a little more optimistic about the Seahawks than our other critics. What is it you see with this team where you think, I could see them squeaking out with a winning record?
I know. I put that into this projected starter series I'm doing, and I got a text from your producer, and it was like, we want to have you on because you're, you know, way too up, you know, you're so optimistic about the Seahawks. And I was like, am I? Was I? I don't even remember. I just said, like, they might not be like a trash heap.
I think that counts.
Their roster is not that bad outside of quarterback. Yeah, their roster is not that bad.
Well, Greg, I mean, one of the things that you look at is obviously with this roster, there's moves that you like, there's additions that you like, but there's still so many question marks. And I guess you could say that about quite a few teams every year, but that's the part that's hard to really predict what this team is going to be, or just how rough is this season going to be based off of how some of those question marks come to play. You know, what is one area that you don't have question marks about this team that you feel pretty confident that they will be able to provide some solid performance?
I like the defensive line, and I have some optimism about the front seven in general, if you throw in their linebackers, you know, Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton. But in general, that group where it's Shelby Harris, who I think is an underrated player, Puna Ford, who's an underrated player, Nuosu, who is a free agent. I was excited about to see where he went. I mean, go watch that Week 18 game, Chargers-Raiders. He was the best player in that game. Not that he's going to do that every week, but he's a good player. And then I think you look at the depth in general. You know, kind of to answer your first question, Daryl Taylor's there too. To answer your first question, like, this is a team that won seven games last year, didn't have Russell Wilson for three of those, did not have really an effective Russell Wilson for about half of them. And their DVOA and some of their analytical numbers look like they really should have been better than a 7-10 team. So yes, you got the quarterback issue, which is a major problem. Mm-hmm. The offensive line to me is boom or bust, but I think they at least have potential. But I think overall, like, this whole idea that Pete Carroll's thinking anything about 2023 is crazy to me. And I just sort of have faith that he's going to have them playing hard and playing the style that's going to have close games in the fourth quarter. And so the whole thought that, like, they're going to be picking in the top three of the draft, I just don't see that. And there are ways, I've seen it in the NFL, where things can break right for ugly type of teams like Seattle, where they're still in the mix in the last two or three weeks of the season.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy. We're talking now with NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal about the Seahawks, and we'll get to NFL as well since there's been just a chaotic offseason. One last question about Seattle, and it's really a broader question, Greg, which is a debate that we've been having for the first time in 10 years. It's going to sound so ridiculous to you, but do you need a franchise quarterback? You would be surprised at how divided the city of Seattle is right now about how they should move forward at the position. How do you see kind of a Super Bowl formula and where a franchise quarterback does or doesn't play into
that? Man, I mean, Pete Carroll's brainwashed you guys, hasn't he? Like, how many other cities are debating whether you need to have a franchise quarterback or not? Like, what? I don't know. Of course you do. I mean, it's better to have, like, a mid-level quarterback than what they have now, which is Geno, who I believe is better than people think and can be serviceable. But it's better to have a mid-level quarterback like a Ryan Tannehill or Matt Ryan, and then it's even better to have a real franchise quarterback. I think you can win either way, but it's obviously a lot harder to me unless you have a top-10 quarterback. I just don't think that's a question, and I think the whole idea of, like, the salary cap getting in the way of paying these guys is overheated, because you look at the way that teams misspend their money or they don't spend all their cap at other positions. And to me, that's a lot more worrisome than having to pay a great quarterback $40 million. Now, if the Seahawks wanted to say Russell Wilson wasn't that guy on his next contract, that's a different conversation, and I can kind of buy that argument. Yeah. But you still need to go find your next one.
Yeah, and I guess Russell Wilson's like tier ranking is what makes the entire conversation tempting for people. But overall, I agree with you, and I find that more often than not, the examples people give of that not being the case are few and far between. And in if you can point to two examples and it's constantly the same ones, it's probably an offshoot.
Right, exactly. And you look, Matthew Stafford, I would not put into that top tier, but he was capable enough to do it and get on a hot streak and have like a high enough level talent that you'd put him in that top 10 mix. But more importantly to me is that he had an organization and a head coach that I think emphasizes offense in the passing game. And I think it's really difficult to get anywhere in today's NFL unless you have that, which is a great plan on how you're going to throw the football well. If you don't have that, like, it's very, very hard to win.
Now, Greg, you know, going broader in the NFL discussion here, the AFC is unbelievably loaded. I don't know if I've seen a bigger disparity between one conference and the other in quite some time, but the NFC seems to be way more open. Who is a team that you're looking at that could surprise people with how well they do this year and what kind of impact they could maybe have in the playoff hunt?
You know, I think if everything broke right, Philadelphia could be in the Super Bowl mix. So that would kind of be the team that would be coming up. You know, they were in the playoffs a year ago, but you said it. I think the NFC is pretty wide open. Certainly the Packers, Rams, and Bucks all have good reason to feel like they'll be back in the playoffs, and they're good teams. But I think it's a little more wide open, and I think if you look at what Philadelphia does well, it's not too different from where they were in 2017, where both of their lines, defense and offense, I think, are really good. And I like their young coaching staff. I think there's a lot of belief there. Jalen Hurts, look, that's a different type of way to try to go make a run with a quarterback like Jalen Hurts. And it might be tough. They might not be able to throw the ball well enough. But I think with that division, and especially their schedule, I could see them winning 12 games, getting one of those top three seeds in the NFC and at least being right in that mix.
Does it feel like there's going to be a team or two in the AFC that are fantastic and it's just such a stacked conference that they don't make it?
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, there's going to be a few that like definitely don't live up to expectations. You look at the AFC West, all those teams think they're going to be great. And so whether it's Russell's Broncos or maybe the Chargers, like one of those two teams is probably going to be a big disappointment. The teams in the AFC North also all think they have a chance, whether it's the Bengals or Ravens or Browns. Just the math tells you that one or two of those teams of all the ones I listed are not going to be there at the end. Like there's a lot of teams in the middle of the pack too in the AFC, which you can't really rule out. The Patriots, the Dolphins, the Raiders, who I mentioned before. So there's just like not that many teams in the AFC where you think like they don't have any chance. And that means there's going to be a lot of disappointed fan bases. And there's probably going to be some coaches in trouble at the end of the year.
Greg, who in your mind, from a new head coaching perspective, has the best chance to be successful, or who you're anticipating is going to do a really good job?
Oh, I think it's got to be the Broncos. You know, Nathaniel Hackett. It's just I'm just finishing this exercise, going through all the starting lineups on NFL.com, and AFC West is the last team, so that's fresh on my mind. But it's just, you just don't see first-year head coaches with rosters like that too often. I mean, Russell Wilson, no disrespect, has better weapons around him than he ever has in his career, like better than most quarterbacks ever get. Like, I think he's got a couple guys who could be number one type of receivers, in Judy, and you have like a number two in Patrick. Cortland Sutton's another number one type. KJ Hamler, they're deep at tight end, deep at running back. And I like their defense a lot, but it's a brand new coaching staff that we've never seen. So it's strange to me to see a coaching staff take over a squad that I think has Super Bowl aspirations. You just don't see it that much. And it's like a big variance play here. Cause I don't know if I love the offensive line, and I always want to see how a coaching staff looks before just like assuming that they're going to be a great team.
Is Tampa Bay still going to be the team to beat in the NFC, or do the Packers sneak in there somehow without Devontae Adams?
I'm not as worried about the Packers as most people. I think their defense is outstanding. They have a great backfield in Aaron Jones, in A.J. Dillon, and they still have Aaron Rodgers. So I don't see the NFC, at least going into the season, as too different than a year ago, which those three teams, you mentioned the Bucs, I'd probably give them the slight edge. But the Rams would be like a 1B, and the Packers would be slightly behind them. Those three teams, to me, there's no reason to think that they're going to fall off majorly.
Greg, what about the NFC West? I mean, this is a division that still is a very difficult division, even with Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner leaving the Seahawks. How do you anticipate this is going to shake out? Because I tell you what, the 49ers are really confusing at the quarterback position. I know they have a good roster. And then the Arizona Cardinals, there's still a big question mark about Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray and how that whole thing is going to work.
The exercise I was talking about, I always end up like disliking some teams more and liking some teams more after going through it. And the Cardinals were the number one team after going through really examining their roster that I thought less of. Mm. That I just looked at the situation and thought, man, this team could end up in the top five of the draft, and it wouldn't totally shock me. It's not just the off-field stuff with Murray and that new Hopkins got suspended, but I just think they have major holes throughout their defense. They've coached up well, but they don't have much of a pass rush. I think the secondary is troubling. They've burned these first-round picks on these off-ball linebackers that haven't worked. And between that and a coach that just doesn't seem to have a lot of answers when things get tough, I could just see it going south, and that's maybe part of my Seahawks optimism. There is the division I don't think is as strong. Like, I think those 49ers games are winnable. I mean, that they'll have a chance. I think the Cardinals might not end up ahead of the Seahawks. I'd probably pick the Seahawks to finish ahead of them if I had to choose now.
I agree. As far as the strength of the division, though, I think that's now shifted a heavyweight title to the AFC West for sure. Last question here. I'm wondering what you think might happen with Baker Mayfield. And for context, as you know, here in Seattle, people are hoping that he's released and the Seahawks can somehow vie for his services and bring him in to compete. Do you see him getting released by Cleveland, though, if, like, Deshaun Watson gets suspended? I mean, what's that situation like?
I don't buy any of the talk that he could wind up playing for the Browns. I think the Browns, who have kind of embarrassed themselves with how they've acted and how they got Watson in the first place, are doing it again with Mayfield, because I don't think they're going to get anything out of him. Teams like the Panthers, which I think is the most likely outcome for him, you know, I've just been waiting for the Browns to either pay his salary or a big portion of it or cut him. I heard, and it might not be right, but I just heard through the grapevine a little bit that the Seahawks maybe weren't a match for whatever reason. It felt like they really weren't overly interested, and the Panthers were on some level. They were willing to trade for him during the draft if the Browns were willing to pay some of his salary, maybe it was half his salary, maybe more, I don't even know. But just the fact that they kind of wanted him at that point makes me think that Mayfield winds up a Panther and not a Seahawks.
All right. Greg, you mentioned that piece you're working out. Do you know when that's going to be published on NFL Network or NFL.com?
A lot of it's up. Six divisions are up. It's at NFL.com/projected starters. So I got a couple more divisions to finish out, but it's just kind of like looking at all the depth charts. And, you know, Seahawks fans should embrace this weird, ugly season. Like, can't you guys just see Pete Carroll being so proud that they went 9-8 and they win week 18, like 16-12 against the 49ers to get a winning record, and that's good enough for the 7 seed? Like, that feels very Pete Carroll.
It's too on brand. It's I'm in this tweet and I don't like it moment for us right here. He is Greg Rosenthal of NFL Network. Make sure you're reading that piece he was talking about previewing all of those rosters. Thanks so much, Greg.
All right, good talking to you guys.
Thanks, Greg.
Very interesting to hear so much there about the Baker mm-hmm. Mayfield stuff, hearing through the grapevine that maybe that wasn't like the best fit, about reexamining the rosters and maybe not being as wowed by the Arizona Cardinals. Lots of good stuff to take away from Greg Rosenthal. If you guys missed any of that interview, you can check it out. It kicks off hour two of the Jake and Stacey podcast. This hour of regular Jake and Stacey alive in front of you is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. What's an advantage to having Geno Smith as part of the quarterback competition?
Well, what the advantage is to me is it sets the bar and it sets a standard for Drew Locke and what he has to compete with. I'll explain here in just a minute. Let's go to cut number 9, Pete Carroll, talking about Geno Smith and what that means for Drew Locke.
He's right with us. Geno really has the package nailed, you know, and so I have that to gauge him on. And so he's hanging with throughout all of this. And we're not holding anything back. We really have just unloaded the installation at this time. He's doing well.
So what is Geno Smith? Why is that important? Well, because Geno Smith has been in this system. He knows the system, okay, with Shane Waldron. And so why is that an advantage? It is an advantage to push Drew Locke to really understand and know the system and to try to master the system and to gain his knowledge quickly in year one. So you have it with Pete Carroll saying, look, Geno Smith knows our stuff in and out. He's nailed down our packages. He really gets it. And now that is the standard that we are going to hold Drew Locke to. And if you want to win this competition, Drew Locke, you cannot be significantly behind Geno Smith from your knowledge. You have to be able to meet his level of understanding of that package, which is then going to help Drew Locke become a better player. So I think that from that standpoint, in and of itself, it is an advantage to have Geno Smith a part of this quarterback competition, because you're not truly starting from, you know, ground level, from scratch. Nobody knows the system. And Shane Waldron is having to teach a new crop of guys. You have Geno Smith, who's been there, and now Drew Locke has to catch up to that knowledge, and it pushes him to really increase his studying and to push him to really get that playbook down, which is a positive.
Second down. After speculation that the NFL Combine would be moved to a new location, the league finally announced the Combine will return to Indy for the next 2 years. Is this the right move?
100% it's the right move. This shouldn't even have been a question. I know that they're trying to make the Combine more of a national product, that they're trying to make this primetime TV and really make some money off of the Combine. But in regards to profit versus what the right thing is to keep the Combine in Indy, where everybody understands how it's going to go. Everybody knows where their meeting rooms are going to be. Everyone knows, from agents to scouts to coaches, how to work that dynamic. And if you change it city to city to city, it's going to be pure and utter chaos. And you're not going to have order. And it's just going to go awry. And you're not going to get as much out of it each and every single year that you would in the past. You're limiting what teams can gather information-wise. And you're limiting opportunities for agents and players to be able to put themselves in the best position to communicate how they feel and get in front of coaching staffs and scouts. And that is why I have really argued against moving the Combine. It should not be a circus. It should not be the NFL draft. And I get why the NFL draft moves it around. I mean, it's supposed to be a party. The NFL Combine is supposed to be about business. This was never designed to be a product that was a national product on the field, televised, and that it was focused on the TV aspect of things, the entertainment aspect of things, rather than, you know, being a true audition for all NFL teams. And that's what you have to focus on when it comes to the Combine.
Third down. Jake, how did the Seahawks transition to find not only new player leadership, but the right leaders?
Well, this is something that I think that is pivotal for Pete Carroll and this Seahawks organization, to make sure that you're putting guys in the right positions to succeed as leaders. And Pete Carroll talked about this in cut number 16, talking about the different transitions that guys have had to make and how they go about trying to address that.
Really, it was the first year when I was talking to him about it, you know, and was hoping I could get him to give us even more than, you know, he was already giving up. And then it was year two when he really kind of took over and started to take over. That's an example of what the nurturing process is, you know, and it is talking to people and seeing guys, knowing guys that others look up to. There's who-sayers, you know, guys that people just listen to more carefully. And, we know that, and we see that as we go along. We're learning our players and seeing how they're taking hold now. But it's just helping the opportunities for those guys to speak up and step out. And when they do, critiquing a little bit and helping them along the way. That's a process that's ongoing. And it, it has a natural, you know, kind of order to it that will take shape in time. And so it's fun to watch because there's guys really excited about stepping into the, you know, the new opportunity.
There are guys that are natural leaders that step into that role very easily and very quickly. I think Quandre Diggs is one of those guys. Tyler Lockett, you know, they step into that role quickly and assume that very, very smoothly. But then there's other leaders like, let's say, DK Metcalf, for example, who, when he speaks, guys listen to. There's a lot of respect with his teammates, you know, in terms of DK Metcalf. But he might not be the most polished leader at this point. Still young, still trying to find his way, like Pete Carroll was talking about with some of these other guys. And you don't want to shut them down. You want to continue to keep encouraging them to step up and to be a leader and to try and gain accountability, you know, amongst the locker room and everything else. And I think that that is really important. I love that from Pete Carroll, that it's not just those guys having to do it on their own. Hey, we're just going to throw you to the wolves and let's see if you can be a successful leader or not. No, they continue to meet with them, foster that relationship, foster that responsibility, and guys grow into it. And people who aren't comfortable with it at first, they eventually grow into that. And I think that that's a really important aspect of it, you know, as they transition from Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and, you know, this new era of Seahawks football, there are going to be new leaders that step up, and the effectiveness is going to vary. But you've got to continue to keep approaching that. You got to continue to keep fostering that and grow that and develop that, just like you would with your body lifting weights, as you would with the playbook and your mental understanding. Leadership isn't something that just naturally happens overnight for some guys. And I love the fact that they are working through that. And that is why I think no matter what era of football that they've had, they've been able to find very good, successful leaders and representatives of this organization.
Fourth down. Coming up in the timeline, one NHL team had an interesting way to cope with a disappointing series loss. So, Jake, some people do turn to comfort food after a bad day or a bad loss. Tell us, what's the best comfort food?
Oh, the best comfort food.
It's a tough question.
It is, because there's
one.
So many options.
One.
Like, best comfort food.
You have a horrible day.
Mm-hmm.
You go home, you get to snap your fingers and have any meal in front of you to help you feel better. What is it?
I think for me, might be like chips and dip. Just like, be it, take, no, hear me out. Hear me out.
Like ranch dip?
No. Chips and dip. Like salsa or
okay.
Like queso dip or
okay.
You could add like bean dip.
Away from saying
buffalo
carrots and ranch.
Buffalo chicken dip. Like just something that you can take. You grab the bag.
You need an
you
activity.
You can have a lot of them, an activity
okay.
That
okay.
Can take your mind
sure.
Off of it. Dip however much, a big, huge scoop onto your chip.
Okay.
And just go
just
to town.
Repeat that action.
Exactly.
Sure.
Over
okay.
And over and
15,
over and
minutes.
Over again until you look at the bottom of the bag and you go, I needed
really,
that.
I really ate through that whole bag.
Exactly. Yeah.
See, okay. Now, the two different things. Number one, I wouldn't – comfort food to me has to be a hot entree.
Well,
like
that could be hot.
Mac and cheese or pasta would probably be mine.
Really?
Like, I love pasta. If I'm just something – I imagine it being a food.
But you don't like
carb.
Spaghetti.
I don't, well, I'll eat spaghetti. It's never what I would choose. There are like five pastas that are better than spaghetti.
Well, that's just categorically false.
Curtis, what would you choose?
Jake's, that's a good one. I didn't really think of that. But comfort food, I'm thinking like a pizza or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, I should have said pizza.
A pizza
that's
is a good one.
Yeah.
A pizza,
that's the answer.
Yeah, because, I mean, you could go grab a pizza real fast. And but
oh,
that's
yeah.
Why I thought of chips and dip. You have it in your house. You just go grab it. And you just start going to town on
well,
it.
Well, the Florida Panthers lost a series to the Tampa Bay Lightning. They did not go with chips and dip. Instead, they took a different approach to trying to calm that loss. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. Before I tell you what the Florida Panthers did to ease the sting of losing to Tampa Bay in their recent series in the NHL playoffs, I have to correct something. A texter, based on our last segment, when I asked you, Jake, what you do, you know, your comfort food of choice after a
uh-huh.
Bad day, a bad loss, from the 206. Stacey has the worst food takes in the industry, and it's not even close. okay.
Where's the lie?
No. There was nothing wrong with me saying that a big carby dish of pasta is a great comfort food. Where is the lie in that? That's a great answer.
That's fair, but
it is fair, but I don't think that's
exactly.
It doesn't save
you from your past food takes.
Literally none of my food takes have been bad.
One good food take does not erase hundreds of bad.
I had many people agreeing that cake is too dry and kind of overrated. Okay.
Yeah, Curtis, you weren't there for that, but that was like Stacey's shining moment where the text line.
It was amazing. No, everyone agreed with me.
First time ever.
I said that spaghetti, that there are just other pastas that are better than spaghetti.
Yeah,
that's not controversial. That's not bad. It's just an opinion that's true.
No, it's just a bad take.
Thirdly.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't even remember what other food opinions I've had because they're normal opinions that don't stand out as being
Stacey, we're not going to take the entire timeline to go through the awful food takes that you've had, but they are
something very clear that
brutal.
That texter is incorrect. So,
okay.
Let me get to
he's not.
Okay.
He or she is not.
A Tampa sports station reported on Monday that members of the Florida Panthers were spotted at a Tampa area strip club at 3 a.m. following the team's loss that pit them in a 3-0 series deficit to the Lightning. They were eliminated on Monday in a sweep. I mean, that's one way to deal with it. We call it the old James Harden approach. Hit up the strip club.
Yeah, James Harden, but that's not like a comfort sadness thing.
James
it's comfort just all the time. It's
James
like
Harden
the second
the
home.
Club just crying.
A lot it's of us stop for coffee on the way to work. A lot of us do our grocery shopping.
Who was the one? Do you remember who was the NBA player that said, I just was buying wings?
Remember? Lou Williams.
Yeah.
He broke quarantine when the NBA was down at Disney and went home for like a funeral and then was spotted at a strip club in the height of COVID.
Yes.
And I just went to go get wings.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just like, whatever, dude. If you're a Lightning fan, right? Obviously, these guys have been unbelievably they've done well, right? Or no, it's the Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
The Florida Panthers. Okay, so if you're a Florida Panthers fan, do you laugh at this? Are you sympathetic, or are you like, you guys are absolutely pathetic and you deserved to be swept?
No, I wouldn't think you deserve to be swept. That they were swept even against a great Lightning team is surprising because
they
had a really strong season.
Well, Florida finished with the best record
in
the
NHL. Well, that's what I'm saying.
The Lightning are two-time defending champions.
Yes, exactly. I don't think – I was surprised that they were swept. I don't know that I'd be like, wow, you deserve it, because, again, it was a great season.
Uh-huh.
It's just kind of
– So you're saying you think it's an appropriate comfort thing to do to celebrate or
to sulk in your loss? First of all, I am not about to be on
your
here on radio
that's what I'm just
with
saying.
My parents and children listening.
Children?
Co-signing. Children? No, sorry. My parents, and other people's children.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, how about – my children. Yeah.
Can you imagine if I had a husband and three kids and I'd never told you guys?
I mean,
I wouldn't put it past
next
you.
Story here. Former Oasis frontman Noel Gallagher was accidentally headbutted while celebrating Manchester City's Premier League title win by the dad of Man City's Ruben Dias. Gallagher said he was knocked out for the game's final 2 minutes as a result, and he had to be taken in an ambulance to a local hospital. Dias's dad wasn't hurt.
Who among us on this show would celebrate so hard that they would knock themselves out?
Well, what?
It would be Jake.
Yes.
What? Me?
Yes.
No hesitation whatsoever. On the text line, 206-421-3776. Which person
I think,
the three people in this room would hurt themselves celebrating something?
Okay, I actually
Every
think.
Every text will say Jake Heaps.
I don't think so. Here's why.
Oh.
I think that I have great spatial awareness. Would I be excited? Yes. Would I be a little bit crazy? Yes. But Stacy, on the other hand,
what?
I think would be the perfect candidate. Hear me out.
Jake, literally told us about how you hurt yourself at the combine. Curtis literally like broke an Achilles Achilles. Torn Achilles crossing the street.
And you have fallen up the stairs. So what's your point?
I fell down the stairs.
And dislocated your shoulder playing the floor.
It was my elbow. Why don't you remember my story?
Don't come at us when we have receipts against you, okay? But hear me out, okay? Before Stacey tries to interrupt me and stop me from convincing everyone.
Ahead. I'll turn my mic off.
Stacey is of smaller stature, okay? So what I'm concerned about with her in a larger crowd when everybody's kind of going crazy is that if elbows are flying, she's more susceptible to being hit, okay, being hit in the head.
Because her head is at elbow level.
Correct. And so I think that just Stacey might be someone that is more susceptible to being injured in that kind of setting than someone like myself. Case closed.
Wow.
I actually like...
You can't argue against
that. No, I actually like accept that argument. Yes.
All these points you raise are very fair.
Last story in the timeline. Nebraska will suspend its tradition of releasing red balloons after the first touchdown of home games due to a global helium shortage.
I'm sorry, what?
Yes. Wait. Yep, correct. A global helium shortage.
Isn't now, helium a... like a naturally occurring gas?
Incorrect,
like
Curtis.
In our atmosphere?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a supply chain issue or what, but it stems from Russia's war with Ukraine. Russia's one of the largest suppliers of helium in the world.
This world is just going nuts. I mean, we can't even get helium anymore. We can't even play the practical joke of sucking in helium and having our voices make funny noises.
No way, man. We need it for other things.
It's a shortage. There is a shortage. Gosh, dang it.
Oh, my God. Someone said Stacey wears sandpaper on her heels so she doesn't trip, doesn't she? I can't believe this person remembered that I do that.
It's kind of memorable.
They sell it for people at construction sites for when you're walking on, you know, like steel or whatever you're walking on at construction sites. And I used it for a couple pairs of heels that were just very, they didn't have a lot of traction.
Yeah, but you say heels and you're talking about also regular shoes that just don't have
traction. I did
do that. Don't lie to the people, Stacey. Oh, I do them for my heels. No, you don't. You wear them on your regular shoes that you wear every day, okay? Come on.
Stacey didn't expect to get called out.
The audacity to lie to our faces when we all know the truth. It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
I feel exposed.
You should.
I want to jump back into kind of what we learned from Greg. It was such a good conversation. So we're going to have kind of back-to-back Seahawks stuff here. We're going to talk about the most important things we learned from NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal. You guys are going to be interested, especially in the line about Baker Mayfield, also with the NFC West. Then we're going to bring on Bob Condotta to talk about the first day of OTAs, everything he saw. It's all coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
We were just talking about a helium shortage. It has nothing to do with sports other than it affects a touchdown tradition for Nebraska. So that was the helium shortage isn't news, but the Nebraska football changing its tradition this year.
Yeah, which is also one of the coolest traditions that I've ever witnessed live and in person at a football game. So when I was at Miami, we played Nebraska early on in the season, and that was, I mean, one of the coolest venues that I have been able to play at and see. And when they score that first touchdown and all the balloons are flying up in the air and everything, like, it is super cool.
Like thousands and thousands of balloons.
Yes, yeah.
What's the coolest stadium you ever played in or just visited?
That's tough. I think one of my fonder memories was going to Florida State, playing at Florida State my freshman year and watching the Seminole come in on the horse and
flaming
and
spear.
The flaming spear and putting it in the middle of the field, and you were just like, oh my gosh, like,
we're going to lose by 40.
Not only that, but like, this is real college football. Like, we're in for it. I threw my first touchdown pass in my career at Florida State before the end of the first half, and then we just got absolutely obliterated. I got hit 13 times in that game, sacked 9. It was a rough deal. It was a learning experience. Welcome to college football moment.
Well, listen, I mentioned the helium because a chemist in the 253 texted us to answer Curtis's question, being very confused about why there's a helium shortage at all, because you were like, isn't it a natural gas? I don't understand. He says, helium is actually really difficult to mine. The only way to make more is to fuse hydrogen together, which currently can only happen in the core, blah, 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 blah. I don't even know what's happening. Listen,
yes.
His name's Ryan. He signed off Ryan the Chemist in the 253. I failed chemistry in high school. You could literally tell me that helium is created by goats jumping over
chemistry,
things,
not my
and I
thing.
Would believe you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So. Yeah, it sounds about right.
Anyways, I feel like we got some kind of answer right. I don't know. We had on Greg Rosenthal, speaking of earlier conversations, who had lots of interesting stuff to say. So before we bring on our next guest to talk Seahawks, I want to talk about what our most recent guest had to say about the Seahawks and the NFL at large. First, is Baker Mayfield that option he's hearing through the grapevine maybe wasn't just a great fit for Seattle, so there may not be a Baker in Seattle after all. Are you buying that?
No, I'm not buying it. I think that when it comes down to a trade or the aggressiveness or the willingness of the Seahawks to, you know, go out there and trade for Baker Mayfield, I believe that the Seahawks had zero interest in that. And quite frankly, you know, if the Carolina Panthers did, it just shows you that they're a little bit more desperate to try and find a solution to, you know, their quarterback problem. The Panthers elected ultimately not to do that because the Cleveland Browns, for whatever reason, think that they have any leverage in this situation and they don't want to pay half of Baker Mayfield's salary. I don't understand that. Either pay half of his salary or cut him and pay all of it. That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean,
this organization is just so utterly ridiculous. But regardless of that, to me, if you're an organization that really, truly is interested in Baker Mayfield only if he is cut, why would you give any sense of
interest into
Baker Mayfield? If I'm them, I am playing hard to get all the way, and then if he's cut, then okay, I'm interested.
And not only that, but the Browns, hanging on to Mayfield, who hasn't been at OTAs. It's not like he seems willing to play for Watson should Watson be suspended. They may be hanging on to him just because, obviously, they own his contract, and that midseason trade deadline is at the end of October. Who's to say that there isn't a team that would lose their quarterback and say, you know what? $19 million is a lot to pay someone, especially for half a season at work, but we are in this thing and we need someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah. He'd come in unfamiliar with the playbook, but you'd get at least a decent starter.
It's true. However, if it gets closer and closer to the season, like this bleeds into training camp, I do think that the Seahawks will back themselves out of the Baker Mayfield conversation. I really do. I believe it would be too tough to have Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith, Andrew Luck in that room. I just think there's too many strong personalities in that room that would be functional, that would make it work. And if Baker Mayfield is going to be joining a team, it's most likely with the idea and the thought that, hey, you're going to be the starter. I would be surprised to see the Seahawks midway through training camp bring in Baker Mayfield and then try and get him up to speed just before the start of the season. I don't believe that they would want that situation whatsoever, and maybe I could be wrong about that, but I think ideally, you know, they, if they're going to do this at all, it would have to be over the next month and a half for them to feel comfortable that they could get somebody like Baker Mayfield up to speed enough to, you know, really truly start the season where they don't feel like they have to, you know, really slow play what they can do offensively just to be able to incorporate him into the offense.
So in your opinion right now, it's sooner and not later.
Correct. Okay. It is not into training camp. Yeah. If it happens just before training camp, maybe, but the Cleveland Browns have got to make a decision here soon. They can't go into the season with Baker Mayfield on their roster. I just think that would be utterly ridiculous. And I, you know, it's a crazy franchise, so who knows, but I just think it would be such a foolish thing for them to do.
Now, Greg thought that the Seahawks could get away with a winning record, which I know that doesn't sound really exciting to a lot of Seahawks fans listening, but I do think that that's more optimistic than some other national critics. He attributed that to the offensive line potentially being better than we think, to really liking some pieces on the defense, and saying, look, if they can get passable quarterback play, they could get a winning record. It's going to take a lot, but it could happen. Another thing he pointed to, not necessarily in his article, but in his interview with us, is that in a recent feature, he looked at all of the starting rosters for all the teams, and there were some that he liked more after examining them and some teams that he liked less or that he didn't like. And the Arizona Cardinals fell into the latter group where he's saying, hey, there's a chance the Arizona Cardinals, who made the playoffs last year, don't make it this year, and that does leave some room for Seattle.
It does leave room for Seattle, and to me, when you look at their schedule right now, the success that they have in their division or lack thereof is going to greatly determine the overall outcome of their season. So these games particularly, I'm not as optimistic about their chances against the Rams this year, but when it comes to the Cardinals and the 49ers, I completely agree with Greg Rosenthal. Those are going to be really critical games for the Seahawks. And if they could go 2-2 in those games and split those games, that would be a big deal for them, you know, in that division. So I think that right now we're all going to be watching and waiting and seeing how the Arizona Cardinals develop at the beginning of the season. The 49ers, what do they look like with their quarterback situation? Is it Jimmy Garoppolo? Is it Trey Lance? So that's going to be really critical, because you look at the Seahawks, I mean, they've got the San Francisco 49ers week two right after the Denver Broncos. So they're going to be challenged right away with division play, and that part of it is going to be really important for them, because there are some winnable games on the schedule, but they also have a tough one as you look at these games, and that's why the division for them, in terms of having a chance to get to the playoffs, they would have to be pretty successful within their division to get a chance to do that.
Text from the 253. So question, why do we want a winning record? Do we not want one of these young stud quarterbacks? That is a great question, and one I'm sure we'll be exploring all season long. Right now, though, we are going to look ahead. We're bringing on Bob Condotta first. One thing, we're taking you around the diamond, thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners continue their series against the Oakland A's today. George Kirby gets the start. First pitch at 6:40 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 5:30 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station, and that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company. How was the first OTAs, and what stands out from the Seahawks? Let's ask Bob Condotta next.